Hello, everybody, and welcome to the War Room. This one is for this weekend's UFC main event, heavyweight in Paris, Cyril Gane taking on Sergey Spivak. Oh, I'm excited for this one. I feel like, I mean, of course, the heavyweight division, there are a few people right around the top that are standout, but these two are two of those individuals. You know, you throw Tom Aspinall in that mix, and I think you've got the next generation of heavyweights. I know Cyril Gane, he's coming off the loss to John Jones, but, you know, no shame in that, especially at this stage in his career. Still only 11-2, which is wild. Main event in Paris, taking on a very, very tough Sergey Spivak, who is on, what, a three-fight win streak? Stopped Greg Hardy, stopped Augusto Sakai, and then arm-triangled Derek Lewis. On a real roll at the moment. Before I go any further, this show is brought to you, as you can see by the pile of beautiful gloves on the table in front of me, brought to you by Elion. Of course, we have a French brand supporting the French-based UFC event. These are just, if you're in town for the event, go to their shop. Honestly, like, I mean, you know me. I've toured the world and bought gloves from wherever I could find a pair of boxing gloves, and I'm very, very picky. And these are, hang on a minute, you need to get yourself some of these as well, actually. Got to get yourself some. Protect the inside of the gloves. Honestly, when you put these gloves on, this is a set that I had Veronica pick out for me specifically. I saw somebody wearing them in a kickboxing match and thought to myself, I need a pair of these. They're just beautiful gloves. Not only do they look awesome, but they fit really well. And they're the MMA gloves as well. They're Veronica's, you can see. They would never fit me in a million years. But they are, I mean, just quality made. Really, really nice, classy stuff. They've got new shorts out as well. If you go onto their website, elionparis.com, you'll see Taylor Lapillus on the front page modelling the new MMA shorts, which I am going to get my hands on as soon as I get out to Paris for these events. Really, really solid brand. Make sure you check them out. We're friends of them. They're big supporters of ours, and we just love their equipment. ElionParis.com. Okay, right. So let's go quick tale of the tape. Let's go through stats. So Cyril Gane, 11-2, as I said before. Sergey Spivak, 16-3. Slightly more experience there. Average fight time is shorter, though, for Sergey Spivak, just over 8 minutes, whereas Cyril Gane's closer to 15 minutes. And you know, there is a clear difference in fight style with these two. Slight height and reach advantage for Cyril Gane. 1 inch in height, 3 inches in reach. Probably going to come in slightly lighter of the two as well. I expect Spivak to be slightly heavier on the scales. He was at a PFL event recently cornering his partner, and he's a big individual. And of course, you know, so Cyril as well. But there's something about the way he moves. You would imagine that when he gets a hold of you, he's incredibly strong and forceful, whereas Cyril's far more snappy, in and out, very light. Of course, he does have strength. There's no doubt about it. But his strength is different. His muscular endurance is more what shines through with Cyril Gane, which is why, you know, his striking output is higher. His fights are longer. Why generally it takes him, you know, 30 or 40 shots to kind of pick at his opponent and wear them down and do damage. Like, he makes these heavyweights look slow. This is the thing that that Sergey Spivak's got to overcome. Cyril Gane makes heavyweights look like heavyweights while he's looking like a middleweight, like a welterweight, like moving in and out of range, gliding, stays light on his feet, something that's very difficult to maintain for a heavyweight. The challenge, of course, is going to be Sergey Spivak trying to close him down, whether he's going to trap him up against the fence and force him into a close range with his hands, or most likely whether he's going to get a hold of him and start dragging him to the floor. He's got beautiful trips and body locks and throws, almost always clears the guard as well. So he's immediately dealt with one, you know, initial hurdle when he hits the floor. He's not, you know, taking people down with a wrestling, you know, a double leg landing in their guard and then having to go through the process of breaking the guard open, passing to half guard, you know, making the decision of where you're going to go there, controlling your opponent all the way through. Of course, there's a benefit to that, but because of the way that he works and because his main strength is to be on top of his opponent, preferably in mount, he needs to get past the legs as quickly as possible, right? So getting a hold of Cyril Gane is going to be the priority. So the challenge is going to be moving into range and not getting picked off. and not getting frustrated and following him around the octagon, where Cyril's moving and juking and changing his direction a lot and forcing Spivak to chase him. Like, that's the real challenge here. Like, I don't expect... And I think there's some forgiveness as well, given the fact that Cyril is not a one-punch knockout dead kind of fighter. Like, you look at the Taito Iwata fight, that was an accumulation of damage. Body kicks, jabs, nice and fast, in and out of range, forcing two of us to miss. Like, that was a very complete performance. And that's what he's going to need against Sergei Spivak, because Spivak's going to come and he's going to bring pressure. He's going to close into range just like Taito Iwata was trying to, but the difference is when Taito Iwata gets into range, he wants to stay in that range, which is even more difficult to maintain than getting a hold of somebody, putting them on the floor and controlling them there. Like, that's like Sergei Spivak's vision in my mind. If I'm Spivak and I'm picturing this fight, I'm going, okay, I've got to close him down. I've got to try and get inside those long snapping punches. I'm going to take a few low kicks. I've got to stay tight to the body so I'm not taking any of those big body kicks. And I'm going to try and close him down. I'm going to smother him against the fence. I'm going to get head position and hold him there for a second. I'm going to take a breath. I'm going to be like, okay, so what feels vulnerable here? And then I'm thinking, I'm going to take a single leg and I'm going to come up to a body lock. And then I'm going to start working hip throws and trips and sweeps. All of the Sambo-based takedowns where he's controlling the upper body. You know, very, very good at destabilizing heavyweights. Like, if you look at his performances, let me pull up his record. Certainly the one against Derek Lewis. What was the other one that came to mind? Oh, Taito Iwata. That's another good example. I mean, he's done it to a lot of his opponents. Greg Hardy was another one where he doesn't always hold them down, but he always gets them back down, right? It's that lovely kind of flowing style where he stays on a body lock behind them and they scramble back up to their feet and he bumps them over and then they scramble back up to their feet and he trips them again. And it gets to the stage where each effort to get back to their feet is more difficult and each takedown that is following that is more soul destroying, right? Like, you can see it in the Derek Lewis fight. I mean, I haven't checked the stats for this. Let me pull it up. Like, how many times did he take Derek Lewis down? Because six takedowns, right? Six takedowns in a 3-minute long fight, 6 of 8 attempts. Like, that's the thing, is it's like once he's got a hold of you, it's down. And you see Derek Lewis, he lands and he's like, okay, right, let me get back up to my feet. That's the other thing you have to bear in mind with heavyweights, right? If you take two bantamweights, if one bantamweight takes the other one down, lands on the floor, there's going to be a subsequent scramble that would be exhausting for heavyweights to go through. So the challenge at the lighter weights is keeping a hold of those people when they start to go, oh, I'm going, I'm stripping, and I'm like, you know, like, they're really difficult. On the other end of the spectrum, you've got a Derek Lewis who, when he was taken down by Gonzaga, just stood up. Like, Gonzaga doesn't weigh 300 pounds. You know what I mean? It's a different kind of challenge. But the exhausting 30-second scramble that you get from a bantamweight is a very effortful and laborious 10 seconds for Derek Lewis or whatever other heavyweight he's taken down. And each one of those mounts up. So it gets to the stage where they just don't have enough energy to get back up anymore. Or that their time getting back up is longer. So there are moments where, you know, guard passing is possible or a back take is possible. You know, Daniel Cormier was great at this. You watch him with, you know, Rumble Johnson and Derek Lewis. It was the same thing. Take them down, let them up, take them down. And not necessarily let them up. I mean, of course, if you can take them down and they'll just stay there. But if they're going to get back up, give them some resistance and then just take them back down again. That's what Spivak's so good at. And because he's very good at controlling the upper body and toppling heavyweights, controlling the upper body while tripping the lower body, for whatever reason, heavyweights tend to topple more than lighter weights. I don't know whether it's because they're taller, so their center of gravity is slightly higher. I mean, I'm sure there's some, I don't know, fit physicist or whatever. I haven't got a drink in here, Jamie. Oh, I have. Like, someone will go, oh, well, it's this reason. But I'm just watching it from an observation perspective. Like, it's much easier to topple Derek Lewis than to tackle him around the legs and wrestle him to the floor. For whatever reason that is. And so Spivak's game is suited to difficult suited to difficult heavyweights. And I think that's what he's got in front of him with Cyril Gane, because it's going to be more difficult to get to Cyril's legs than it is to get to his upper body. I feel like he's going to be able to close him down if he's patient and get a hold of him. So this is where the challenge for Cyril Gane is, up against the fence, like counterpunching and moving. You know, if he can maintain space and he's constantly forcing Spivak to walk through the center of the octagon, like that's, I'm going to have a drink and I'm going to come back to a point in a minute. Because I suppose this is a wider point, right? Allow me to go off on a tangent. Octagon control is a phrase that's used when everything else is even, right? So if the effective striking and grappling is even, then that's followed in the scoring criteria by octagon control, right? Effective striking and grappling followed by aggression, octagon control. So aggression is, of course, debatable as well. But let me focus on octagon control for a minute, because this is something that Cyril does really well, that even some of the judges that watch MMA that are scoring these high-level fights, they sometimes struggle to grasp. And I don't think that the judges that are scoring the fights in Paris are going to have this problem, because the European judges are very kind of up to date. It's some of the commissions where they're using people across other sports and they're not quite tuned in to exactly the scoring criteria. And this is why we see variance in the scorecards, because a lot of things are, you know, subjective. Like, it's opinion-based, because people form opinions based on what they understand of a word. Octagon control, for example, for a lot of people will be, well, the person's holding the center. They're the one that's keeping their opponent back up against the fence. So is the point to control the center of the octagon? Like, what are we trying to control here? If it's controlling the center of the octagon, then you might as well hang the belt on a chain above the octagon. And like the center point is irrelevant, right? The idea is that you're in charge of the space. And this is what Cyril does really well, moving backwards. This is where the risk is for a lot of heavyweights, because they don't. It's difficult to anticipate this, because a lot of heavyweights don't do it, right? Adesanya up against the fence against Paulo Costa, I use this fight so much as an example, but it was such a slick performance. It really highlighted the technical deficits that I expected to see from Paulo Costa. No offense to him, he's a handful. He's a very well-conditioned, aggressive individual that's got really, you know, good fundamentals. But the bit that he was missing was the bit that was the magic that Adesanya has, right? And there's no way you're telling me that because Paulo Costa was the one that had the center of the octagon behind him, that he was winning octagon control, because he wasn't. The reason why I say that is because he was doing what Adesanya wanted him to. He was stepping where Adesanya wanted him to step, and he was eating the shots that Adesanya was setting him up for. So then, you know, you pick someone who's like a real, real pure counter striker, like a Machida. Machida will draw you into spaces, and he'll anticipate where you're going to be, so he'll counter you as you do it. Wonderboy, another one. This is why he struggled so much when Tyron Woodley stood with his back foot up against the fence, because Wonderboy is a counter striker. He doesn't want to go chase you. He wants to pick you off as you move in. And this is where Cyril does really well, is people moving towards him, allowing him to spring back and sting, or dart off to an angle and sting. Like, look what he did to Taito Avassa. What a beautiful knockout that was. It was an accumulation of damage. Taito Avassa was primed, ready to be stopped. But, you know, it's the whole plethora of strikes that Cyril Gane throws. Not an individual bang, this is the shot that landed first and that's what's going to take your head off. That's why he's such a technical striker, is because maybe he doesn't have that single punch knockout power. But I think that's a benefit in this fight, because I think Sergey's going to be hittable if he's not concentrating on his footwork and he's not patient closing distance. If Gane starts to sting his legs and pick him off with a jab, it might even further entice Spivak to close that distance quicker, in which case either one or two things is going to happen. He's either going to get through that range with pure intention and fortune, or he's going to get hit on the way in and Gane's going to move before he gets there. It seems to be quite clear who's going to do what in this fight, and I'm always open, of course, to be surprised, and I often am surprised. You know, I'm expecting Sergey Spivak to come in to close him down and take him down as quickly as possible, get that body lock so he can start wrestling and taking away his base, passing guard, you know, working up to the shoulders, and you know, if he can take Mount, I mean, this is where you know, controlling heavyweights is easier if you're a genuine heavyweight, right? Like Daniel Cormier was really impressive because he wasn't really a genuine heavyweight, right? He could make 205. And, you know, and if you look at what Jared Cannonier was able to do to his frame, you would even say Daniel Cormier, you know, at the right time, at the right age, would have maybe even made middleweight. There's no way you're saying that for these guys. They're both incredibly big individuals. So they are genuine heavyweights. Cyril's going to be able to scramble. I expect him to have escapes on the floor. I expect him to be able to escape from Mount once or twice, perhaps. But I expect Spivak, if he's able to score the takedown, to be able to keep getting to that position. And then we'll see where Cyril Gane's conditioning is when he's forced to grapple with it. I mean, I know he's got submissions on his record, but the level of opponent is different here. I'm not saying he's not going to try an ankle lock or something, but I'll be very surprised if he gets it. It would be better for him if he's creating scrambles to threaten a submission and then try and get back to his feet as quickly as possible. Because Spivak, once he gets into mount position, he looks incredibly heavy. And he clamps with his legs as well. He's not like spread out in mount. He clamps with his legs. And when his opponent turns onto their side to get away from the ground and pound, he's wedged them either side of their body. So he's like a bull rider, you know? He's like a bull rider and he's punching at the same time. Really difficult position to shake him from. And I see if Spivak's going to win this fight, I would expect it to be in that position. If not a TKO, he's going to at least rack up enough time and points in that position to win rounds. For Cyril, it's got to be about space, hasn't it? It's got to be about space. He's got to be on his toes. He's got to be moving and stinging and trying to set those traps for Spivak to walk into where he can bah, bah, sting him, beat him up. And those body kicks as well, of course, are going to be a key. What have I mentioned? Oh, the wrestling. I mean, you know, it's quite clear the way this is going to stack up. Spivak, 5 takedowns per 15 minutes on average. Crazy for a heavyweight. With an accuracy of 65%. So, you know, he's scoring well over half of his takedowns that he's attempting, and he's attempting a lot. Takedown offense is 70%, but I don't anticipate Cyril choosing to grapple with him, at least not early on, unless he's under real striking pressure. Kind of even on sub-attempts, slight favour for Sergey Spivak, but not a great deal in it. But the takedown difference, hardly any. Less than 1 per 15 minutes for Cyril. 20% takedown accuracy and 45% takedown defence. That's where this fight's going to be decided, I think. I'm looking forward to it. I hope you enjoy the fights. Make sure you check out Elion. Honestly, if you need a new pair of gloves or whatever, shorts, whatever you need, you won't regret buying this brand. They are absolute quality. ElionParis.com. Enjoy the fights, and I'll see you next time. Taylor, double
impact. Venez le style de Taylor Lapidus, combattant complet. Intelligent avec des déplacements très fluides.
Ouais, l'accélération de Taylor Lapidus de Coutoude. Et il va en finir dès le premier round. Victoire expéditive de Taylor Lapidus qui devient champion du monde des poids coqs.
J'ai eu des moments difficiles dans le combat et ça fait du bien d'entendre le soutien du public de son pays.